And now, Mormon Miscellaneous with Van Hale on K-Talk.
Good evening, and welcome to another 2 hours of Mormon Miscellaneous with your host, Van Hale. And this evening, I'm going to open up the subject, and if you'd like to call in and ask a question or make a comment, I would be happy to hear from you. The subject last week that I pursued, in fact, a little bit here and there the last several weeks, has been the subject of the Mormon difficulties in Missouri. In particularly in 1838, which concluded with the Mormon War that lasted from August 6th to October 31st in 1838. And I also touched a little bit upon one of the hot topics during that period, and that is, at least as people look back on that period, and that is about the issue of the Danites. And I didn't pursue that as much as I would have anticipated, and I may get to that a little bit more this evening. But you're welcome to call in tonight with whatever question you may have or comment. If you have something that's a carryover from last week, I'd be happy to hear from you. Let me give you the call-in numbers. For Salt Lake, the number is 254-5855. And for Provo, that number is 470-5855. For Ogden, Weber, North Davis, 670-5855. And for those who would like to call from out of the area, call at 801-470-5855. And if you would like to participate by email, you can do that by sending an email to van.hale@k-talk.com. And that's Van spelled V-A-N dot Hale, H-A-L-E, at k-talk.com. So let me hear what's on your mind. Again, the subject this evening is open. Be happy to entertain whatever thoughts are on your mind, and so let's proceed in that direction tonight. I thought maybe to start with one thing that was a problem for the Mormons in Missouri in 1838, and it's been a problem ever since, as it is a problem today, is that there are people who, because of their strong bias, are willing to make statements which are just utterly and outrageously false in regards to what Latter-day Saints believe. This did cause problems in Missouri, as it has caused problems elsewhere, in that a number of the problems that the Missourians saw in reference to the Latter-day Saints, their attitude toward the Latter-day Saints would have been very different if they had had a correct understanding of the Latter-day Saints' beliefs and intentions and attitude. But what instead happened is that people with a strong bias were spreading around distortions or misrepresentations, and sometimes even just outright fabrications in regards to who the Mormons were, what they were doing, what they believed, what their intentions were. One of the things that I have done over the years, it's been kind of an interesting little approach I've taken, is to think about things from my own personal experience. And I don't know if those of you listening have done this. I suspect that you perhaps have. But as I've studied Mormon history, we are right now about 175 years from the foundation, the founding of the LDS Church in April of 1830. And I have, in my readings of early Christian beginnings, I've thought about the LDS faith in the same sense, or I do what I have seen within the development of Mormonism. I have imposed that back upon early Christianity and think in terms of where the church is today in relationship to where Christianity was 170 years from its beginning. And it's been interesting there. Of course, you can't draw too many conclusions and too many parallels or press this too far, but what we have seen within the establishment of the LDS faith and its development over the past 170 years, we look at where Christianity was about 200 AD, which would be about 170 years from the beginning of Christianity. It's interesting to see things that have happened, trends that have occurred, what has happened by way of the production of documents, the development of ideas and concepts, the controversies that arose, and so forth. And so I've found that interesting to me. Also, what I have done in more recent times is I look back on what was going on in the LDS history in Missouri in 1838 and compare it to what's going on today that I have experience with, and in fact, as I'm going to talk a little bit right now, I have had personal experience with this situation, and that is that people coming from a strong ex-Mormon or anti-Mormon bias tend to present a very twisted and distorted point of view in regards to Latter-day Saint belief and what they claim about the LDS faith. And I've had some some exchanges and some things going on with this site that's called exmormon.org on the internet. Now I have to read that what's posted on that board from some computer other than my own, because they blocked me from reading material on there from my own computer, and of course have not allowed me to engage in discussion there. But what I have encountered that gives me some kind of insight as to what was going on in Missouri in 1838 is that you have on this ex-Mormon site, you have people who are very hostile towards somebody who's a believing member of the LDS faith. Hostile to the point of twisting and misrepresenting and making false statements and so forth about individuals, spreading false information. And I'm just going to go back to an example that occurred and has reoccurred over the last several months in regards, and this is something I'm speaking about personally, some personal experience, to demonstrate the kind of thing that happens and raises a flag for us to pay attention to as we go back and read testimony and documents and source material in early Mormon history. We need to take into account the fact that people coming from a particular bias are have a great propensity to twist and distort their opponent's point of view. Well, this is what happened. This was back in September, and it's happened just recently again on exmormon.org. An individual who posts there frequently goes by the name of Deconstructor. And he has corresponded with me also by way of email. And back in September, I had made an impromptu comment response to a question somebody asked in regards to Mormon polygamy. And this was the comment that I made, and this man, I assume it's a man, who calls himself Deconstructor, responded to it. And let me just give you this. Okay, so this is a rendering of the statement that I made back in September in this impromptu comment. I said, in my 40 years of looking very closely at polygamy, it's been a subject that has been of some interest to me. There is not a single instance where I have encountered the speculations that have been presented far and wide throughout the history of the LDS faith about polygamy, that polygamy was about providing promiscuous sexual opportunities to Joseph Smith and other polygamists. That simply is not true. There are those that say Joseph Smith wanted to have sex with beautiful women, so this was the reason for it. But the fact is that all the teaching and doctrine and philosophy and theology about polygamy had to do with all ran along different lines. And it would be wrong to tell you the conclusion is that it was a sexual matter in their minds rather than the restoration of an ancient practice and the opportunity of providing good husbands for a larger body of good women. To take a different point of view is simply speculation. So I made that comment back in September, and the Deconstructor responded. He said, last night on your radio program, you said the following in regards to Mormon polygamy, and then presents his version of what I said. And then he goes on and he says, in other words, you asserted that Joseph Smith's polygamy had to do with a restoration of an ancient practice. Welcome back. Let me continue in this discussion. If you want to join in, I gave the phone numbers and email. If you'd like to participate, use those, and I'll bring you into the conversation or discussion. And again, the subject I'm pursuing this evening is not a requirement that you pursue with me. If you want to go down a different road, I'd be happy to go with you. So keep that in mind. Let me hear from you. Okay, so this Deconstructor is making a false and twisted and bizarre representation of my point of view in regards to Joseph Smith on the subject of polygamy. And so I responded to him, and let me read this response. Also, for those of you who would be calling in, just let the phone ring and I'll get to you as I have an opportunity. I don't think that I'm not going to put you on just because I haven't picked up the phone. Just hang on, I'll get to you. At any rate, this was my response to him. You completely missed my point, and at any rate, he went on in these numerous references that he presents to demonstrate that there was a sexuality in polygamous marital relationships on the assumption that I am taking the position that no such thing occurred. Well, my reply is this: you completely missed my point, and your references in no way apply the common view of polygamy, to which the common view of polygamy was to provide greater opportunity for a man to satisfy his sexual appetite. I'm not sure how you came to the conclusion that I think that Mormon polygamists did not have sex with more than one wife, but your conclusion is completely erroneous. It almost seems as though you're trying to twist my comments for some reason. My point was that the main purpose of polygamy was other than sexual. I have never encountered an LDS source which established that sexual gratification was the purpose of polygamy. I assume you understand a man without marriage and children can have sex for gratification only, even taking precaution that no pregnancy occur. You even cite Jacob 2, which makes the point that raising up seed unto God is the main purpose, not providing greater sexual opportunity for men. You seem not to be aware of the fact that many plural wives did not have children, and many did not have sex with their husbands. There were other reasons for plural marriage in Mormonism other than having children on this earth. Further, many women were sealed as plural wives to men for eternity only. If you are not aware of these facts, let me know and I will supply the references. The evidence supports a view that Joseph Smith had, at most, few sexual encounters with other women, with women other than Emma. There is not a single established descendant of Joseph Smith through anyone but Emma. Convincing evidence through DNA tests may yet identify descendants of his through plural wives, but as yet, it is difficult to explain how Joseph Smith would have had many children by his wives, yet none was identified as such. To have been a son or daughter of Joseph Smith would have been considered a great honor. Why would this have been completely covered up by people who were strong proponents of polygamy? Why must we turn to speculation and very late second, third, or fourth-hand comments to claim that Joseph Smith had children other than those by Emma? He refers, I'm referring to some statements he made that are very late, second, third, or fourth-hand comments, rather than the better evidence. And I continue, you talk fact when fact, and then use such words as tentative. Okay, I'm going to just skip the last little bit of this. But my point is, my point here is that I made a statement. He misinterpreted my statement. I pointed out to him very clearly what my point was in my statement. I was not saying that there was no such thing as sexuality in Mormon polygamy. That's, of course, absurd to suggest that. And yet, even after this, at least two times since this time, this deconstructor on the exmormon.org bulletin board has come back to this and insisted again to at least two other times, there might be more that I didn't see, but at least two other times has insisted that I allege that there was no such thing as sexuality in Mormon polygamy. And then, to make matters even worse, just to kind of demonstrate how something like this happens, even though it's absurd to think that I would stand by such a position, and even though I corrected this, he insists upon it enough times that you have another individual, a very prominent poster on this exmormon.org site, Randy Jordan, who puts this on the exmormon.org bulletin board about a week ago or so. He says, another example, where he says, Hale said on his show a few months ago, paraphrasing, that he had studied Joseph Smith's polygamy practice for many years and that he had found no evidence that polygamy served to provide Smith with increased sexual opportunities. Hale's attitude flies in the face of documentation from many of Smith's closest friends and disciples, which has been detailed by such LDS historians as Todd Compton, Richard Van Wagner. Since many of Smith's close, loyal associates, as well as many of his former plural wives, testified that those relationships were sexual, Hale is simply in intellectual denial of the facts. Read excerpts from Compton's research. And he gives a link. So, so what's happening is that you have someone like the deconstructor in this arena,
occurrence, Mason,
insisting that on several occasions that I believe something that I don't believe, even after I'd corrected him in such a way that it seems impossible for him to misunderstand my point. My point simply being that polygamy, the purpose for polygamy was not to provide additional sexual opportunities for Mormon males beyond that monogamy provides. It was about the restoration of an ancient order and also the providing of husbands, a good husband for good women, which exceeded the good men in numbers, and to provide for the raising up of a righteous seed to God, as mentioned in Jacob chapter 2. But besides this, there were other reasons that were given for polygamy, as we find in early Mormon history. Now, there's not just one simple answer, but the one thing that I have never encountered is anyone saying, any argument from Mormon sources saying the reason for polygamy was that men could find greater sexual satisfaction and gratification. That simply was never presented as a reason. In fact, it would have been much easier, as anyone could imagine, if that were the position, that it's you can have sex with anyone that you want to. That's a Mormon. If that were the Mormon position, then why? And if it's just for expanded opportunity for sexual gratification, then why not? Why bring the whole marriage concept into it, and the having of children, and the responsibility of large families, and the support that all that required, and so forth? So, at any rate, my point, in spite of the fact that I think it was clear when I first stated it, and I responded to this individual who misunderstood my position, he still insists that I believe something that I don't believe. And then another individual who hasn't demonstrated, I think, any common sense judgment in his assessment of this, has gone ahead and restated my position, falsely again, of course. And so somebody who is participating on the exmormon.org bulletin board is in a position of hearing enough statements, hearing this reiterated over and over again, that Van Hale believes something false, that he doesn't believe. But what's the person going to think? He's going to think, well, I know what Van Hale believes about polygamy, and it's absurd that he would believe this. Van Hale has an absurd view on polygamy, because the only thing they're hearing is that which is coming from people with an extreme bias and an obvious desire to misrepresent and misinterpret my point of view. So if you take this sort of thing that's happening, I'm talking from personal experience. This helps me understand, as you go back into Missouri in 1838, how it is that people are saying Joseph Smith believed this, he believed that, this is what Mormons believe, when in fact it was not. That was one of the major complaints from Joseph Smith and other Latter-day Saints, is that people were misrepresenting, twisting and distorting and fabricating falsehoods about their beliefs and views. And that did certainly add a great deal of fuel to the fire that led to the Mormon War and the expulsion of Latter-day Saints from Missouri. Okay, well, we have some callers that would like to get in. Let's go to a caller. You're on the air.
Yes.
Yes, go ahead.
Yeah, am I on the air now?
You are on the air.
Oh. Van?
Yes.
Okay, if polygamy isn't about sex, why would they marry, like, 48 wives, for example?
Well.
And if they're not having sex, then how can they produce seed, righteous seed, if they're not having sex?
Okay, I don't know. I don't know how else to say this. I've said it as clearly as I have. Let me just repeat myself. There's a difference between having a number of wives with the sole purpose of having extended sexual opportunities, as opposed to the idea of restoring an ancient order and providing wives, a husband for women and children for women who wouldn't have an opportunity otherwise. Can you see a difference there between just saying, well, it's all about sex for the man, sexual gratification for the man?
Well,
that's
why wouldn't he,
all that it's about?
Okay, let's say, if take Joseph, for example, or Brigham Young, or some of the early members of the church are the only ones that are, the leaders in the church, the only ones allowed to have polygamy, evidently. But you take a small town, for example, which most towns were, if the prophet gets 48 wives and the 18, 19, 20-year-old boys in town, other members, young members, they get nothing. I mean, why not let the young men have at least one wife instead of the prophet taking, say, 48, for example.
Well, your point's a good point, but it didn't work the way you're suggesting. You go back into Mormon history and you don't find young men who wanted wives who were not able to marry because there were no women available. Fact is that the purpose, one of the purposes in plural marriage was to provide, not just, was to provide for women who were anxious to have a good husband who was a priesthood holder and an active member of the church, in order to provide for them that opportunity to have a husband and have family with children by a good husband, good father, they were allowed that opportunity through polygamy, whereas they would not have been allowed that without it. All right, let's continue.
I have a problem with, you take a Mormon town, virtually everybody in town's Mormon, and they're going to church and doing what they're supposed to be doing, but the prophet gets 48 wives and the young men get none at all. I don't think that the young men were all reprobates that didn't deserve wives.
Well, you're repeating yourself. Let me just repeat myself and say that just simply didn't happen. That isn't what happened. And so, you know, until you can come up with an example to demonstrate that happened, then your point is without merit.
Well, I know the same thing is happening with the polygamists today. Is if you read the newspaper, the Tribune, you know, it talks about the prophet Jeff has 50 wives and he's running the 18, 19-year-old men out of town.
Well, but that has no relationship to what I'm talking about. That doesn't have anything to do. You're saying the same thing is happening. That's not the same thing is not happening because that didn't happen in early Mormon communities in the 19th century.
Well,
if you can give me an example, I will entertain that. But
you know, when babies are born, there's about 50% women, 50%, you know, boys and girls, about 50-50. But if you have the leaders of the church only taking, you know, 48 wives here, 20 here, 30 there, then the numbers just tell you that there's not enough left for the young men in the same Mormon town.
Well, what I'm telling you, though, is that is not what happened. That isn't the case. For one thing, a number of the wives that Brigham Young had, for example, I don't know to whom you're referring with the 48 wives, but...
Well, Joseph Smith.
Well, Joseph Smith... Joseph Smith didn't have 48 wives in the sense that we're talking about.
Well, he had 48 that they can document. That
he had
actually had relations. I mean, the church historians aren't saying that. Well, he had more than that, but they're not really counting the ones that were sealed to him after he was dead, of course. But he had 48 that they know the names, dates, and so on.
Well, I don't know. You know, the figures vary depending upon different researchers, but the better research doesn't place the number that high, doesn't place the number nearly that high, and also the way that polygamy worked I'm not aware of a single instance. I've never seen, you know, I'm not saying it's not possible. I'm just saying it has never come out in the extensive study of polygamy that I've done over the years of anyone, any young man in any town complaining that there is no one for him to marry, anyone that wanted to get married. What you're doing is you're presenting something as hypothetical and you're saying, well, the numbers would show this and that and the other. But the fact is that it just, to my knowledge, never happened. And until you have an example to demonstrate that, I can't even see how I can address your point. There were not very many Latter-day Saint leaders who had 48 wives in the first place.
Well, no.
The vast majority of polygamists had two wives. The vast majority. And you take someone like Brigham Young and his wives. A substantial number of Brigham Young's wives were wives that no young men in Salt Lake City would have married anyway. They were women who'd lost their husbands, or they'd immigrated and they were not of marriageable age. But your point would be a good one theoretically, but it's only theoretical.
So maybe a lot of the young men didn't want to get married, I guess. But like I said, why was the polygamy such a secret in the early church too, even among the church members?
Well, I think it was a secret because it was against the law.
Well, why are they doing this against the law?
Well, because Joseph Smith was given a commandment to enter into this, and it was something that, I mean, it's hard to speculate as to what would have happened had Joseph Smith not been murdered in 1844.
Polygamy is what got him murdered, too.
No, it's not.
Well,
no, it wasn't.
When the local, expositor, press is printing things about polygamy and so on, and he orders the printing press and the office destroyed, and then they arrest him for destroying the office. That's when he's in jail, and then the mob came and killed him. But he was in jail because of destroying the press, because they're exposing polygamy.
Well, you can assemble things that way. It was a very complex situation, but by far, without even a close second, the major problem and the major reason that Joseph Smith was killed had to do with the politics in the state. It had nothing to do with believing in baptism by immersion or baptism for the dead or polygamy. It didn't have anything really to do with that. The reason that there were people that wanted the Mormons out of there and wanted Joseph Smith dead had to do with the fact that the Latter-day Saints were gathering and they held the political balance in Illinois, and that was a problem they had faced in Missouri. It was the fact of gathering together. If Joseph Smith and three other families were living in Illinois and they each had 15 wives, nobody would have been out to kill them or anything. It wasn't about that. It's a mistake to get that in your mind. If you go back and read historical sources, it's clear and obvious that the real issue that led to Joseph Smith's death, the primary issue, by far, was the political issue and the fact that they were gathered there in large numbers. So, polygamy was... nobody got... was talking about killing anybody when the Missourians destroyed the Mormon press in Jackson County, Missouri, in 1833. Destroying a press was not something that led in that time would have led to somebody being killed for destroying a press. It wasn't a capital crime. It was not, would not have been considered that by anybody. That was not the purpose. That was not the reason why Joseph Smith was put to death or murdered. It was political. Your point is, I acknowledge your point. The practice of polygamy led to some dissenters in Missouri, in Nauvoo, some dissenters. That was one of the major things that led to William Law and some others leaving the church and starting another faction in Nauvoo and opening a press and starting to publish the Nauvoo Expositor. And they were interested in exposing Joseph Smith and his views on polygamy. But also, one of the main things that they were attempting in the publication of the Nauvoo Expositor was to get the state of Nauvoo to repeal the Nauvoo Charter, which would have taken away the Nauvoo Legion and the protection that and the courts in Nauvoo and so forth, and would have resulted in a loss of protection for the Latter-day Saints. I have read through the original minutes of the council meetings that were held June 9th and 10th, in which they were debating what to do about the Nauvoo Expositor, and the idea that all they were interested in was trying to cover up polygamy was that simply doesn't come out in the debate they were having over what to do about the press from the original minutes.
It was section 132, and they're talking about if you should espouse a virgin and then espouse another virgin, another virgin, another virgin, that you're not committing adultery. But according to Nauvoo Temple records and various other records from church historians, here's that a lot of people, the women he married weren't virgins because they were already married to other men. Like, for example, Lucinda Pennington Morgan Harris, wife of G.W. Harris, Miranda Johnson Hyde, wife of Orson Hyde, married when she was 24, 1839. The first of his first dozen wives, nine of them were already married to other men, which is adultery.
Well, that depends. Certainly depends on the situation.
Well, but if you're already married to another living man, and she's and that man is courting her, and she's living with him, and that according
Van
to
Van Hale and okay. Morgan Miscellaneous on K Talk.
Okay, I'm back. Are you still there, caller?
Yes. So I don't see any reason at all why he'd be marrying the wives of other living men that are still living with their husband. Like, for example, Nancy Hyde, the wife of Orson Hyde. She was 24, married her in 1839.
Well,
Henry Jacob's wife, Adam Leitner's wife, David Sessions' wife, John Cleveland's wife when she was 17. I don't see any reason.
These are matters that I think need to be looked at one individual at a time, but the situation, as I see on this, is first of all we don't have a substantial enough documents and information to be able to answer quite a number of different questions about the beginnings of polygamy and so forth. And frankly, I don't see within what Joseph Smith presented an explanation of his marrying women who were married to other men, if it is your assumption that he was marrying them and that they were having sex with two different husbands. We don't have enough information really to sort this all out as to what was behind the whole idea.
Well, the church hides that information. It's embarrassing to the church. There's no reason why. Family diaries, okay, like Mary Pratt, the wife of Parley P. Pratt. Okay, there's writings and so on in various places. I think didn't he even talk about it in a meeting of offering Joseph asked for his wife.
Well, and one of the things that has come out in several different people's testimony is that Joseph Smith was doing this as a test. I don't know quite what to make of all of that, but the assumption that you're operating on is that these marriages of Joseph Smith to women that were married to other men, that those marriages were something more than a marriage of to meet some particular principle or concept, and that it was in fact a marriage that involved sexuality.
Well,
I don't know whether that's correct or not. Joseph Smith had a point of view on polygamy that extended beyond this life. He believed in plural marriage was something that would extend on into the eternities, and there were individuals married to Joseph Smith and Brigham Young and others who were married to them only for eternity and had nothing to do with any sexual union here on earth. Now, I don't know I simply don't know what the situation was.
How many husbands does a woman need on the other side?
Well,
I mean, Parley P. Pratt, I think he could take care of his wife, and I think Heber C. Kimball could take care of Helen Kimball, but instead he married Heber C. Kimball's. Let's see, what was that? Well, anyway. Like I say, if you go into church historians, okay, for example, Let's see, Andrew Jansen, formerly assistant historian of the Utah Mormon Church, listed 27 wives in the historical record. Okay, there's 27. See, Orson F. Whitney and his wife.
I think I really kind of need to move along because I've got other people waiting, but I think I have your point. You've made it and repeated it several times. The fact is that Joseph Smith had more wives than one. The fact is that he also entered into marriages with some women who were already married. I don't quite know how to fit that into the theology of plural marriage if, in fact, I'm assuming that there's something that would explain this and make this understandable from Joseph Smith's point of view if we had more information. But I don't know, I simply don't know what the rationale was behind Joseph Smith marrying these wives of other men, except along the line of thought that they were married to one man for eternity and they were, or for time and to Joseph Smith for eternity.
I think Heber C. Campbell and Parley Pratt.
Okay, let's continue our discussion. This is your host, Van Hale. You're listening to Mormon Miscellaneous. And let me give out our call-in numbers and our email if you would like to participate. The call-in numbers for Salt Lake, that number is 254-5855. For Utah Valley, 470-5855. For Ogden, Weber, North Davis, 670-5855. For those who are listening on the internet, would like to call in from outside of the area, call in at 1-801-470-5855. And to send me an email, send it to van.hale@k-talk.com. And so from there, I'd be happy to hear from you. The subject is open this evening. We've been talking about polygamy here a bit. If you want to go down that road, that's fine. If you want to go somewhere else, that's fine also. Let me begin the second hour by going to an email I received a while ago. And this email says, "Hi, Van, there appears to be a contradiction between Jacob 2:24 and D&C 132:38-39 with respect to David and his wives and concubines. Was it an abomination as it states in Jacob or acceptable as it states in D&C 132:38-39? I was wondering if you had any thoughts on this." Okay, I would just restate my statement that I made earlier, and that is that the LDS position from 1829 to the present has always been one position and one position only, and that is that the rule is one man is to have one wife unless God commands otherwise. And so in those instances where David and Solomon took wives that were not approved of by the Lord, and in regards to Solomon, he took a number of foreign wives that were not approved of. And David, of course, in the case of Bathsheba, taking Bathsheba as his wife was not approved of by the Lord. Some of his other wives were actually given to him by the prophet Nathan, as we find in 2 Samuel chapter 12, verse 8. So what was an abomination was when those two individuals did that which was not approved, endorsed, sanctioned by the Lord. That which is approved by the Lord, which we find in Jacob chapter 2, it indicates that there is a circumstance under which the Lord would command or justify plural marriage, and that would be to raise up seed unto him. And so I see I think if you read Jacob chapter 2, verses 24 through 30, and you read Doctrine and Covenants section 132, and read the whole context of what's being said, I think it is clear that there is no contradiction between those the Book of Mormon passages and DNC 132. There have been a number of reasons, however, presented for polygamy beyond just the raising up of seed in this life. That is something that there are numerous examples of this. And so it's an oversimplification to look at polygamy as the only reason being to raise up seed into this unto the Lord in this life. There were other reasons, as I mentioned earlier. Okay, let's take a look at one more email. This one, some have proposed that Sidney Rigdon was influential in the production of the Book of Mormon. In your reading of early church history, is there any evidence of contact with Sidney Rigdon before the latter part of 1830? And that the answer to that is no. There is no evidence that shows any connection between Joseph Smith and Sidney Rigdon prior to 1830. And in fact, the whole idea would be the idea that's being promoted that Sidney Rigdon was somehow involved with the production of the Book of Mormon is, I would say, ludicrous. It requires Sidney Rigdon traveling, leaving his home in Ohio, traveling a long distance to meet with Joseph Smith, who was many, many years his junior, and to collaborate with Joseph Smith, who had no religious background of any prominence. He had not been prominent in any religious movement of any sort. He was not a religious figure at all, and he had very little education. The idea that Sidney Rigdon, who had been a very prominent religious figure for a number of years, would be traveling to New York to conspire with this unknown, almost illiterate person to produce the Book of Mormon and then come into Mormonism as a subordinate to Joseph Smith just doesn't make any kind of sense, has no logic behind it, and there is no evidence, no early evidence that there such a thing took place. So that idea is, I would say, one of the very weakest of all theories that have been advocated in regards to the Book of Mormon. I think it's the only theory that I would see lower than that, or less likely than that, is the automatic writing theory that has been proposed. But that's my own opinion. Okay, let's go back to our phone lines. You're on the air.
History that has given the church more problems, or that is more problematic than polygamy?
I think that that's an interesting question. It's fairly subjective. My inclination would be that polygamy would be the most prominent problem that the church has faced throughout its history. But of course, when you look back at the Missouri period, look at the Missouri War, where members of the church are being killed and massacred at Hans Mill, and others were killed and driven from their homes and so forth, the severity of the anti-Mormon attitude at that time, which had, of course, nothing to do with polygamy, you could argue that that was more severe, more significant in that sense.
But it's not as great a reaction, but doctrinally, from our point now, it seems to me that the doctrine of polygamy.
I think doctrinally, it would be hard to find anything to compare with it. Attitudes about or doctrines pertaining to the Godhead and, you know, the traditional great controversies over the relationship between the Father, Son, and Holy Spirit have that were big issues, have been big issues throughout Christian history, would probably fall into second place in my estimation behind polygamy, but I think polygamy would be number one. Okay, looks like we no longer have that caller. Let's go to this call. You're on the air.
I don't know what happened there.
Oh, okay.
Anyway, I don't know where we got cut off, but as far as doctrine is concerned, especially from in today's climate, I don't know of anything that is as controversial as polygamy is in past history. That being subjective, I think you agreed with that somewhat.
Yes, I think so. I don't think the literature that pertains to the subject of polygamy is so massive. I have made a concerted effort to read polygamy material over the years for the last 40 years, and I've read massive amount of material on polygamy, and I'm far from having read it all. I am constantly encountering things written in the past that I haven't read, and today, last year, there are more published on polygamy than I've had time to read. I'm falling farther behind, actually. And those people who make the claim that they know all about it, and I just don't believe them. I don't believe that that it's possible to have read all the material and to know all about polygamy. Plus, as I was mentioning earlier, we have the problem that we only have two items, really, from Joseph Smith on polygamy, and they don't begin to address the questions that have been asked about it, and I don't know how we go about answering questions from Joseph Smith's point of view when we don't have anything from him that addresses the issue.
Well, where I got nailed to the wall with an associate of mine is the very thing that this last caller brought up, that here Joseph was married to wives who were already married to living church authorities and others, or at least living church authorities. And his position was that, of course, there isn't anything to explain it. You can't explain it. That was just dead wrong for an individual to be. How can you possibly explain that? And I simply didn't have an answer.
Talk. Okay, let's continue. You still there, caller?
Yes. This is one of the things that is so enigmatic that I just have to put it on the shelf and say, I don't know what in the world this is all about. But anyway, you were saying the other reason, something about this being more important after the resurrection than now?
Well, what I was saying is that we have on record from Joseph Smith several ideas about plural marriage. One, you have marriage for time only, and you have plural marriage for time only. You have marriage for time and eternity, and plural marriage for time and eternity. There are examples of both of these from Joseph Smith and in church history. And then you have marriage for eternity only, and plural marriage for eternity only. And
marriage for eternity only. What?
Yes.
Explain.
Well, it's. An example is that one example is Parley Pratt. It's recorded in Wilford Woodruff's diary that there was a problem with Parley Pratt and his wife wanting to be married for time and eternity, and so there was an idea suggested of finding a wife for Parley Pratt for eternity only. I mean, it's in. I don't know how many examples we would find of this, but this is certainly an option for somebody to be married to someone not for time and eternity, but for eternity only. And there are a number of...
In other words, not living with them or having any marital associations with them now.
That's right. But to be sealed and married for eternity. Now, the point that is problematic, the most problematic point for me in regards to the marriages of Joseph Smith would, of course, be the marriages of Joseph Smith to women who were married to other men. But we have these different situations in regards to marriage, and we would need to look at each one of these situations individually rather than, you know, people say, well, he was married to other men's wives, and the assumption there is that he was married to these other men's wives and that he was sexually associating with them, concurrently with their other husbands. That may or may not be correct. I don't know. The thing is, we just don't have enough information to sort this out. But within the theology of polygamy that makes sense to me from Joseph Smith and from what Orson, particularly Joseph Smith, Orson Pratt, are the ones that we have the earliest and best information from in regards to plural marriage, was that it doesn't, there isn't really in that theology something which makes sense to me for a woman to have two husbands that she's living with concurrently, having sexual relationships with concurrently. That simply does not fit into my understanding of the theology, Mormon theology of plural marriage.
Well, nobody claimed that this was part of our polygamy, was it? Did they?
Well, that's the claim that's being made, yes, that the fact that Joseph Smith was sealed to some other men's wives means that he was having sexual relations with these women and who were having sexual relations with their other... So you actually have women having two husbands, but concurrently.
There's nothing in our literature that would suggest that this was appropriate.
I can't really make sense out of that in light of my thinking in regards to theology of plural marriage.
But are there any claims from early church leaders that concept was legitimate?
Well, one, not that I'm aware of. There is either some aspect of plural marriage that Joseph Smith conceived of that hasn't been passed along, or there has to be some way to explain this. But at any rate, I need to pause for a minute, and I'll be right back.
Van Hale and Mormon Miscellaneous on K-Talk, AM 630 KTKK.
Okay, let's continue. You still there, caller?
Yes, my statement was, and I'm not sure that you answered it clearly, but this yes or no question. There is nothing by early church leaders that legitimized or suggested that plural marriage was to include more than one husband to one wife. True or false?
let me state my point. So I don't know what to say to that. I am not aware of anything. Let me say it this way. My understanding of the theology of polygamy is that a man has multiple wives to provide an opportunity for the women who would like to have a righteous husband and raise a righteous seed would have that opportunity, both in this life, that was one of the reasons, or perhaps the main reason in this life, and that is the ultimate reason in the eternities, in the resurrection. I cannot find in my own reconstruction of plural marriage any reason or validation of the idea of a woman having two husbands.
But that's not the question.
I know, but let me just go one step further with this. The evidence is conclusive in my mind that Joseph Smith did, however, have as plural wives women who were married to other husbands at the time he was married to them. The question that I'm faced with in this is, what was this relationship between Joseph Smith and these other women? And I don't have really a good answer for that. Nobody has a good answer for it because we don't have good enough documentation. I am not aware of anything from the teachings of Joseph Smith, which we only have section 132 of the Doctrine and Covenants and the letter that he wrote, that he dictated to Sidney Rigdon's daughter. That's the sum total, really, of what we have of significance presenting Joseph Smith's point of view on this. The one thing in the Sidney Rigdon letter, or the letter to Nancy Rigdon, that could possibly be given some application in this, along this line, is that he says that whatever God commands is right, no matter what it is. And so if God commanded a woman to have two husbands, then according to that thought, that would be right. But within the letter, there is nothing that suggests that that was the intent of that point being made by Joseph Smith. So I would simply say, as far as I am aware, I haven't seen anything that makes sense out of the idea of a woman having two husbands in LDS religious thought.
Yeah, that's one of the things that seems to me to be a very difficult problem for us to deal with, because just on its face value, and that's all that we have, nothing else, is that he was married, as we have been discussing. There's just no rhyme or reason for that.
Well, I am convinced that there is a reason for it. I just don't know what it is.
Well, from the information that we have now, and from our limited understanding right now, in my mind, there's just absolutely no rhyme or reason for it. And if there is, that's got to be forthcoming a little bit later. Let me just ask one more question along this line. It has been alleged that Oliver Cowdery caught, and I don't know the source from this, whether it came from Oliver Cowdery, I don't think so, but probably from third or fourth hand information, that Joseph was caught in the barn in an intimate relationship with, I can't remember who the woman was. You know what I'm talking about, I suppose.
Well, one of the complaints that Oliver Cowdery had with Joseph Smith in the Missouri period was that he refers to the phrase is a filthy, nasty affair with Fanny Alger. And this was thought by many to have been Joseph Smith's first wife, first plural wife. Obviously, for somebody who didn't understand or didn't believe in plural marriage, as the first caller tonight, you know, is saying, talking about the plural marriage, polygamy in the Old Testament, he seemed to be of the opinion that those were filthy, nasty affairs engaged by Abraham, Jacob, Esau, Moses, David, Saul, you know.
This was
Solomon.
Before Oliver knew about the revelation.
Well, that would be my assumption, but there's not enough evidence for me to feel comfortable in stating that to be the fact. But you know, when you're dealing with issues like this, I'm coming from a position of being a believing Latter-day Saint, and I have to in my experience, my years of studying the life and teachings of Joseph Smith, I am persuaded that he was a genuine. Okay, let's go back to our caller. You still there?
Yes, I am.
Okay, well.
And I was a big fan of Porter Rockwell.
You were?
Porter Rockwell, as some of the scriptures I've read of him, he may have been a true angel, a guardian angel. But, Van, I believe you've done so much damage to the Latter-day Saints, and you're a Mormon. And I love my Latter-day Saint friends. But as you speak all of this scripture, you sound like a lawyer, fella. And
I'm a printer. I'm not a lawyer. I'm a printer.
Okay, a printer. But as Christ said, a tree, you judge a tree by its fruit. And I don't know why you guys are arguing about, well, this and that and this and that. Anytime a man over 21 has sex with a girl 14 or under, do you believe that the Lord dictates that?
I don't believe that. No, I don't believe that that's...
You see the trouble the Kingstons are having, and they're a bunch of baby rapers.
Oh, well, I think that there's a great deal of exaggeration in regards to these people. I have had business dealings over the years with the Kingstons, and while I don't agree with them, they hold to a religious position I don't agree with.
You've got to be kidding me, fella.
They're practicing plural marriage, which I disagree with. I don't think they have.
Let's see how long you
right
go
to do
before
that.
You cut me off.
Well, I am definitely going to cut you off because I have other people listening, but I've never cut. You obviously don't know anything about me or my program.
I do know about the United Mine Workers and the Kingston's relationship with the Mine 700.
Well, I don't know anything about that.
Oh, well, okay, and you don't.
I don't know anything about
partner,
it. It's not really.
You're not a Latter-day Saint. You're a scriptural Mormon. And
okay.
May I close with that?
You may. Thank you. Okay, let's go to another caller. You're on the air.
Hi, Van. My name is Mike Morton. First time I've ever called into your show, and you're kind of a hero to me when I was a young, naive 19-year-old missionary in the late 80s. I went on a mission and had a bunch of your pamphlets and flyers, so... It's a pleasure to talk to you, sir.
Well, thank you for calling.
Although since then, I've actually left the LDS Church. I know on occasion you mentioned Recovery from Mormonism, the website, and I wanted to give a shout-out to all my friends there and all my friends that might be listening in.
Yeah, I've seen your posts on there many times.
Yes, I have the website, josephlide.com.
Uh-huh.
You stated earlier... the impression I came away with from some of your comments was that Joseph Smith was never sealed for all eternity to girls that were actually, or women that were actually sealed to their first husband. That's the impression I came away with, but you told me during one of the breaks that wasn't necessarily so. So are you admitting or denying the fact that at least six of Joseph Smith's wives that he was sealed to for all time and eternity were in fact sealed to their first husband, who was still very much alive when Joseph Smith took them for himself?
Well, I'm not sure. I'm not sure what to say on that. This is what I would suggest, is that Joseph Smith was in fact sealed to a number of women who were married to other men at the time. I don't...
Are you honestly telling me, Van, that you do not know if any of Joseph Smith's wives that he was sealed to were, in fact, sealed to their first husband? I find it very hard to believe that that's what you're telling me, because this is the great Van Hale. You're the man I idolize in my mission. Do not tell me you don't know if those girls were married to other men for all time and eternity when Joseph Smith married them.
Well, let me just suggest something to you. The first wives that Joseph Smith was sealed to, for example, the wives of Beeman, who is most often thought of as his first plural wife, was married to Joseph Smith before there were marriages being performed for time and eternity. That didn't happen that early in the Nauvoo period. I don't know, I simply don't know what sealings actually took place. We don't have records of that sort. We have, there are some Nauvoo Temple records, some ordinances that took place after the Nauvoo Temple was finished, but that wasn't finished until after Joseph Smith was dead. So you're asking me for some specific details. I can do nothing other than say I'm not really sure.
If you go to FamilySearch.org, the Church's genealogy website, you can verify the fact that he had several wives that were sealed to him for eternity, but were also sealed to their first husband for eternity.
But when did what are you asking me, though? Are you asking me at the time of the marriage of Joseph Smith?
I'm asking you, are you denying the fact that Joseph Smith was sealed for time and eternity to women who were already sealed to their first husband for time and eternity? Are you unaware of that fact? Can you honestly look me in the proverbial eye and tell me that you are unaware of any wives that Joseph Smith married for eternity that were, in fact, already sealed to their first husband for eternity? Can you honestly say that?
What I'm trying to say to you is something that's a little bit more substantial than what you're attempting to demand from me.
I don't mean substantial. That's a simple yes or no question.
It's not a simple yes or no question. Are you asking me was he sealed to somebody before his death or after his death for time and eternity?
Before his death, before he died.
Okay,
I'm just gonna
ask you for a reference. Give me the name of somebody to whom Joseph Smith was sealed to for time and eternity, who at the time of the marriage, this person was sealed to Joseph Smith for time and eternity, the evidence for that, and cite for me also the evidence that she was also married to another person for time and eternity at the time of the marriage to Joseph Smith. Just give me a name.
All I'm asking for is a name. Okay, I don't have books and references in front of me. Off the top of my head, I believe Zena Huntington Jacobs and...
What was the date of that marriage? Let's take a look.
But did he marry her?
Yes.
I believe Joseph met her in October of 1841. She was 20 years old. Let me think. There was, I believe, Sarah Cleveland. He married in June of 1842.
Okay, now in 1841, there were not any... There had not been performed any marriages for time and eternity in 1841. So
How about Elizabeth Durfee, June of 1842, Miranda Hyde, April of 1842, Patty Sessions, March of 1842, Mary Leitner, February of 1842.
Okay, but throwing out names is not answering the question that I'm asking.
Okay, now, go to www.familysearch.org. There's some good LDS authors that have written some books. And Sacred Loneliness, I believe, has numerous references. If you're really lacking references, Dan, I thought you of all people would have references.
I've read and gone through in Sacred Loneliness to great extent. But the point is that I'm trying to make, and I'm just hoping that you will understand what I'm saying, is you want to put me down for not being able to give a yes or no answer to a question that I cannot give a yes or no answer to, not because I'm ignorant or something like of that nature, but because of the fact that the documents that you are insisting upon that would be required to answer the question the way you're insisting upon it simply don't exist.
Are you familiar with the stories of Martha Bredesen and Sarah Pratt, but Joseph Smith tried to marry Orson Pratt, actually was excommunicated when he came home from his mission. Sarah told him that Joseph Smith tried to seduce her to become one of his wives. He believed her over Joseph. But Joseph excommunicated Sarah and Orson, and eventually Orson got back into the church, but he's never quite the same.
When you're talking about Orson Pratt, yes, I'm familiar with that situation, and I'm familiar with the allegations that were going back and forth and the statements that were published by John C. Bennett in regards to this.
Yes,
I'm familiar with the situation.
Joseph Smith over Sarah Pratt and Martha Brotherton? I mean, I don't understand how you could believe that Joseph Smith did not try to seduce Martha Brotherton when she claims he did. And in fact,
the term seduction is your term.
He tried to marry her. I won't say seduce. He tried to marry her. And when he denied it, he had Harley P. Pratt in the August 1842 edition of the Millennial Star publish a lengthy diatribe essentially denouncing polygamy, denying and denouncing polygamy, saying, no, we don't practice polygamy. It was in the 1835 Doctrine of Covenants.
Now, just a minute. You're going too fast. You're going way too fast.
How can Joseph Smith...
Just a minute. You're going too fast.
Let me go slower then.
Okay, let's go back to Parley P. Pratt. I'm not asking you to speak slower. I'm saying rather than just run off with all of these different names and things, why can't we talk about these things one at a time?
All right, because your office is not going to admit that he was sealed to more than one wife at a time. So let's focus on something else. Why would Joseph Smith deny the practice of polygamy?
That's not a fair statement. Mike, that's not a fair statement. You have no idea what I will acknowledge and what I will not acknowledge.
I cannot comprehend the possibility that you do not know who Joseph Smith was and was not sealed to. Even the church's genealogy website acknowledges that he was sealed to women who were previously sealed to other husbands.
You're evading my point. My point is this, that we do not have significant kinds of historical documentation to be able to answer the kind of question that you're insisting that I answer with a yes or no answer.
Here's one thing you can't answer with a yes or no question. I have an LDS friend. I talked to him the other day. When I told him Joseph Smith married other men's wives, he flatly denied it. He laughed. He thought it was ridiculous. He's listening right now. I called him up. His name's Nathan. Can you please just acknowledge for Nathan, my good friend Nathan, that Joseph Smith did, in fact, marry other men's wives, even if it was just for time? Did he or did he not marry other men's wives?
Well, I think I've said it 6 or 8 or 10 times tonight, as well as hundreds of other times. I don't know.
10 or 12 times in order to believe it. And my friend Nathan might be one of those people. Sometimes they just need to hear it 10 or 12 times before they'll believe it,
your suggestion seemed to be that I'm unwilling to acknowledge that. I was familiar with that point.
The previous caller that I think you trying to do more harm than good, because sometimes you're truthful to, I think you're in denial, but I think you're truthful to a fault sometimes. And that's what I love about you now is you know, when in doubt, I say, hey, look, Van Hale even says he was married to these women. So I appreciate your efforts for that. It helps me in my efforts to educate people about Mormonism with the old josephlive.com website. Mm-hmm. But I'll let you move on to another caller.
Okay.
I appreciate your time, Ben, and like I said, it's a pleasure to talk to you because you at one time were kind of a hero to me, and now some sort of a strange way, you are again, once again in my life, somewhat of a hero. So keep up the good work and keep exposing the truth of Joseph Smith's polygamy to other men's wives and marriages to other men's wives, and I'd love to hear you next Sunday or the Sunday after maybe talk about why the Nauvoo Expositor was destroyed. So you have a great day, Ben. Good to talk.
All right, thank you. And I thank you for that kind of strange compliment, huh? Okay. You're on the air.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. I need to have you hurry fast. We're running out of time.
Well, I can go on hold if you're going into a break.
I don't think we have any more breaks before the end of the time, but I...
I think that for us to go back and discuss this issue about Joseph Smith, it's really just open season, it sounds like, on people taking pot shots at Joseph Smith. I think we could ask the question, did Monica Lewinsky, did she seduce Bill Clinton, or did Bill Clinton seduce Monica Lewinsky? As far as who Joseph Smith seduced here and who did Joseph Smith seduce there, I think it's just open season on Joseph Smith, and I think there's much more to this than what people are discussing. It's like standing from the outside of the fence looking in, and there's just all kinds of aspects of this people don't understand. So I wanted to touch bases on just a little bit about what I understand, if that's okay.
Okay.
It's my understanding that you cannot go to certain places in the celestial kingdom unless you are married. This is one of the doctrines of the church, that is being married, husband and wife and having children. And it's my understanding, the way I've looked at Section 132, that the plurality of wives, at least used to be a part of the doctrine of the church, had to do with the exaltation aspect of the relationship, or where you find yourself in heaven. And it's my understanding that William Law, Wilson Law, used to be members of the 12, but they were actually involved in plotting to take Joseph Smith's life. And there were men who, if they weren't scoundrels at first, later they were found to be scoundrels. And I believe there are ladies who chose, who wanted Joseph Smith to be theirs in their hereafter. And so there were, from what I understand, many of these relationships where these ladies were married to some men on earth who were scoundrels, but they wanted to have this eternal marriage with Joseph Smith. And there are other relationships that I don't know enough about to make a decision. Does that make sense?
Yeah, yes, I would agree with you on that. There were the problem is we just don't have enough information, at least to satisfy me in my dealing with history, to be able to say with confidence what was the actual relationship between Joseph Smith and a specific woman.
Also understand that after Joseph Smith passed away, that there were other women who were not married at